Welcome, I'm Lana. This is a show on the subject of love and dating from an anti-feminist perspective. If you missed the other show on this topic, be sure to watch it with Tara and Melissa. Joining us for the first time is the talented blonde butter maker who has a segment on Red Eyes TV. Also returning guests, Bree Fauché and Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. This show is available in both audio and video format, available at redicemembers.com or redice.tv. Elora, Bree, and Rebecca up next. Joining us for the first time, Elora, also known as Blonde Buttermaker. I'm sure you've seen her segment on Red Eyes TV. Say hello, Elora.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much for having me. These kind of talks are really needed today, so thank you.
And of course, Bree, who's also been on the show. So welcome, Bree. It's good to have you back.
Thank you for having me back. I love being on Red Ice.
And then also Rebecca, known as Blonde in the Belly of the Beast. Another blonde here, so say hello.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Now, Elora, off air, we were kind of chatting a little bit about, you know, you're very, very blonde and very, very light. And you said that you got teased a lot in school. So tell us about this.
Oh, my gosh. I was teased so much. Like, I used to walk to school, and during the winter time, one time I was wearing a silver coat and my hair, you know, is white, and it was snowing really hard, and my friend's mom pulled up to pick me up and she didn't see me, and then she like just drove away, and then like everyone was saying, well, you just blend in with the snow, and then kids used to throw snowballs at me and they would say, oh, it just blends in with your hair. You don't even know it's there. And people would shout like, old granny, you know, down the hallway, and they would call me like albino werewolf, and everyone would be, they would say a lot of mean things.
Well, but just know that there's a lot of women that pay a lot of money to have hair that is your color. So, and I always remind people forget what truly natural, like pure platinum blonde looks like. You know, yeah, they forget right. It. Jeez. Well, I wanted to have you all on to kind of continue a series that I started to talk about love, dating, courtship, more from an alt-right perspective. This is a topic that comes up a lot. I get a lot of requests for it. So I just kind of wanted to dive into it and we can talk about thoughts on modern day dating. So is courtship and romance lost? Who wants to go first?
I definitely don't think it's lost. I think it's just a matter of we've forgotten how to be really romantic, and we're kind of having to relearn that in a little bit of, in some ways, because feminism really poisoned people's brains, where a guy doesn't know if it's okay to pull out a chair for a girl, or if she's going to be like, I can do that myself. I can open a door myself. I can carry my own suitcase. Whereas if a guy offers to do that for me, I think that's kind of romantic. Yeah, sure, take my bag. You're so sweet. But now we've made men afraid to do that kind of thing and afraid to be romantic.
I totally agree. I don't actually have much dating experience myself, but I absolutely agree with Bree.
Yeah, I think we're burdened by choice too. And I hear like a lot of women like, well, I didn't like this guy for this small reason. And I hear this, you know, from dudes too. They kind of like don't try on a relationship because of minor things. And I think it's because of the availability, why everybody's so flippant.
Yeah, it kind of makes us exceedingly picky, where we overlook the really good qualities of a person just because, oh, maybe I can do better. It's this constant, maybe I can do better scenario, to the point where we miss out on somebody potentially great.
Yeah, and the other thing is that, you know, when you're with someone after a while, you grow together. You evolve together. You work on your weaknesses and your strengths, and you become a better person. At least that's what I have found in my relationship. So you have to give some people a chance. They might be rough around the edges, but you can kind of work through some of those sometimes too. You know, true love really does change people. So let's get into thoughts on, you know, advice for young women that are dating in the current year. What advice can you offer them in this degenerate society that we're currently living in?
I have a good one that I really want to say is, do not find your potential spouse at a bar. You cannot be connected to your intuition or even your sense of smell or any primal instincts we have if you're like totally drunk and at a bar, and just don't do that.
I totally agree. That whole thing they say where men don't take the girl they meet at a bar home to meet their family, that's true. It's completely true. You're not going to find your soulmate in a bar or something. You're much better off going for Match.com or something where you can be very specific about your political ideology. Maybe go on several little coffee dates and keep them to about a half hour and be straightforward. Tell them, I want to get married. I want to have kids.
Right.
I would like to be a stay-at-home mom. That way you're not wasting each other's time. And a man that wants those same things isn't going to be afraid by you saying that.
That's true. Yeah. I definitely heard of people that have been together for like, you know, many, many years. And then they're like, we broke up after like 10 years because we decided, or like one person didn't want to have kids. It's like, didn't you know that, you know, when you started out dating, wasn't that the first thing you talked to each other about?
I had a friend that did the exact same thing. They dated for a year, lived together for a year, then were married for a year. And then they got a divorce because one of them decided that it was just more fun to date around. And she would sit there while she was still married, going over OkCupid. Oh, this guy looks cute. I wish I could have an OkCupid account in every single state.
Why? Just,
yeah.
Why would you want that, God?
It's like, oh God, no wonder the divorce rate's so high.
I think too, a lot of times people nowadays, they don't take the time to really get to know each other. I mean, getting to know each other nowadays in our modern era is, what's your favorite color? What's your favorite band? Who did you vote for? They don't ask the big, deep philosophical questions, or what are your life goals? What are your desires? What makes you tick? These are conversations that you need to have, and it's better to have it sooner than later when you're dating, so that you can filter it out and say, this person is wrong, doesn't check the boxes that I need, doesn't match what I want in the long run. And for women, we can be picky, so I always say it's a matter of saying no more often and weeding them out until you find the guys that are actually right for you. And it has to be someone also that you can be good friends with, because you're not going to just be la, 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 la in love all day long in a marriage. There's real practical things that need to be done. Diapers that need to be changed, trash that needs to be taken out. So it better be a good friend that you enjoy being with.
Get this bit on my back, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely think that's like our culture, is dates are like going to the movies, or going, you know, where you're, focus is not on the other person. You're staring at a screen, but you're supposed to be forming this bond. So going for a hike or doing something more where you need to be having a conversation and connecting.
So what if a woman is over 30 and she's starting to freak out because she hasn't met Mr. Right? I've heard from a few of those in the alt-right. Words of advice for that lady.
I would say, don't panic. And if you're at that place, you're in the right spot. If you're watching all of Lana's videos, just take a deep breath and watch all of these videos, because you're in the right place and you definitely have enough time to correct it.
And don't be in a rush to make a bad decision either. You still have a little bit of time to be picky. Don't get so panicked that you're, oh my God, I'm 30. I got to get married. I got to have kids. You still want to make sure you find the right person, because this is a lifetime commitment you're making here. And even if things do go a little bit slowly and you find somebody after your fertile window kind of closes, there are lots of white babies out there that need love as far as adoption.
Yeah, that's true. Everyone wants to adopt babies from overseas, but like, what about taking care of our own?
Right. And they tell women and men these days, you're more moral if you adopt a black baby or something. So, you know, there's lots of white babies out there that need affection in the adoption system.
Rebecca?
I mean, my sister, she had her first baby at 31. And even though we live in Seattle, she was still the youngest person by several years in her birthing class. So I'm 29 and I have a boyfriend, but I'm not married yet. So I understand this freaking out. Like, it's like, yes, in the pit of your stomach, just like absolute panic. Like, what if I don't have a family? Oh my God. But you just have to, I need to take my own advice on this one, but you have to control the panic and try to make good decisions through it. That's all I can say about that.
Yeah.
I also think you have enough time. I have a large group of mom friends, and actually most of them are 35 to 37. And I think having children that late in life is better than not having children at all. And if you've gotten this far without finding a spouse like that and having children, you may have been operating under the masculinized feminine for too long. And you should, you know, take a step back and ask yourself what areas of your life you need to really reconsider and reevaluate.
I heard Stefan Molyneux say this once, and I think it was very powerful and it was very true. He said, when you start dating somebody and you really like them, just be so great they can't say no. Be so great they can't say no.
I think, too, that there's a lot of paranoia about, like, oh, my God, I'm 30. My fertility has plummeted. That's actually not true. There's a huge baby boom among white women in their late 30s. If you stay healthy and you take care of yourself, you can have babies later. It's not over. You're not dried up and old like some people try and fear monger people into thinking.
Fear mongering, so. Exactly. That's what the medical community around pregnancy and birth is, just complete fear mongering. I have a friend who's 37 and she's had two home births and she was considered high risk, and her OB didn't want to see her because she knew she was having a home birth, and he said he was too old. She was too old, but she rocked it. She had two babies at home, completely healthy and perfectly fine.
Yep. There's a lot of women that are having babies, having their last kids at 45. I come from women that had babies until they were 45. My grandma had my mom when she was 43 years old. So, you know,
wow.
Yeah. I mean, if you take care of yourself, I think that's another thing that all you girls know about is, you know, the chemicals, what you're eating, what you expose yourself to. All these things affect your fertility, your egg quality, just your overall health, because there can be some girls that are 22 and have horrible egg quality because of their lifestyle choices and what they eat and the products they use. And there could be a woman who's 35 who actually has better egg quality. So these things are also important.
I would say that how you take care of your body now, especially, is going to affect how it works 10 years from now. So keep that in mind.
And you also want to pass on good genes and good health to your child. So while you're pregnant, you want to make sure that taking care of yourself is your number one priority. I know a lot of, like, the mentality when you're pregnant, you're like, oh, I can eat whatever I want, I'm pregnant. But actually, it should be the opposite. You should be really strict about what you eat,
right?
Because it's not only you,
exactly.
It's also your child and then your child's child and so forth.
It's your bloodline. You're taking
your
care
bloodline.
Of
your
Elora, I know you're a health nut like me. Were your pregnancies pretty easy?
Oh, my first pregnancy, I was before I knew anything about health, and my first pregnancy is what drove me to this point in my life, absolutely. And that pregnancy was a lot more difficult than my second pregnancy. My second pregnancy, I always say, like, besides morning sickness, but I always was like, I don't even feel pregnant. Like, I felt great. And that's when I was really health minded, and my labor with my second was really fast, easy, not a problem. As opposed to my first, it was terrible. It was horrible. And I was eating like cookies and strudels and terrible with my first. And my second, I really strove to be better, and it was so much better.
Yeah. And then you can make better choices once you learn some of the crazy things that go on in hospitals. You know, once you learn some of those things, I just did a show with Ayla and Jennifer. Listen to that, because we talk about some of the crazy things hospitals will try and do to your baby that you need to know about so that you can be informed. So if you do decide to go have babies in a hospital, there's certain things that you really need to say no to for the health of your baby. We want healthy, healthy little European babies here, right?
Healthy, not sickly, not... Yeah, that's a whole nother topic. Absolutely agree.
So on the subject of femininity, do you ladies think that women have lost their femininity, their softness? Are they becoming more male brain?
I think it's there underneath the skin. I think it has been lost a little bit, but it can never be fully lost. And I think that's why so many women today are on antidepressants and anti-anxiety medications, is because they're feeling the discord inside of themselves because they are not living a true feminine lifestyle, and they're feeling it. But today's medical society just wants to push it away and get a medication for that. But it's trying to reemerge, and we should let it reemerge and not medicate it.
I was having this conversation with Brittany Pettibone a little while ago about the same thing. And she was telling me how she went into a mall and all the clothes for women just looked so unbearably masculine. And I've noticed we've kind of glamorized things that
yes,
are
that's so
a lot, just so masculine. Like, I remember
the
even when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Yes. When I was a kid and I was watching gymnastics and figure skating, I had this bias toward the girls with the long, beautiful, sensual hair and all the gymnasts with the little pixie cut. I just thought they just look like boys. So they just look like boys. So I've always kind of had a thing for long feminine hair. And I think we need to bring that back and stop saying that girls with a half shade head are edgy. They're not edgy.
I used to have a haircut like that when I was totally.
We all do dumb things when we're young. Yes. Oh, yeah. I had purple hair, sang in a band long ago too. So yeah.
I did the blood red thing.
Oh, nice. I think with women working, that it's kind of a natural inclination to want to be more masculine because you'll be rewarded financially if you are more decisive and more forthright about wanting a raise, things like that. And so I think that that's probably where this guise of masculinity is coming from. You know, I worked on Wall Street for a little while, and historically, until I started my YouTube channel, I've been a kind of a career woman. And as soon as I stopped doing that, it's just been about embracing my femininity. And so I think that it's really unnatural for women to be in that world. And once they're removed from it, that they do kind of go back to their roots and their femininity.
Yeah, I think too much time working, too much time around politics, a lot of the too much time, you know, thinking about making lots of money. These are very male brain type of things. I know that if I'm involved in that side too long, I feel miserable. I'm not happy like that. You know, it's much more fun to be around the house, be with family, do little things around the house. Like for me, it's more cathartic and it kind of it sets me right. Being outside, just to me, that's a good example of, you know, sometimes when we try and work too much, work too hard, be too involved in politics, it's a very masculine thing. And it's almost like we feel that on some level that we're going against what our natural state, if you know what I mean.
I was always much happier in home economics classes than I was in any kind of male-brained algebra science kind of class. I just nailed my home economics classes. I love the cooking, love the sewing. So I don't know. I think they kind of programmed that out of me by the time I got to high school. And I was made fun of a lot for looking forward and going to sew in class and making a stuffed animal in home economics and cooking pasta. And I really did feel as though I was being told that that wasn't what a woman should really strive for, and that was for weak women.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's about having a balance because we are left brain, right brain, everything is a balance. We do have some masculine aspects and we do have some feminine aspects, and it's about learning to balance them. I mean, look at us ladies. We talk about politics, we do videos, we fight back. We're also kind of in a time of emergency, like I've talked about. You know, shield maidens have to rise to the occasion when the town is being attacked, right? And that's kind of how I feel where we are. But it's about a delicate balance. I know some days if I work too hard, it's like, oh, shoot, you know, we have to take care of this and this and this. And then I feel miserable that some things around the house have been let go, you know. So it's about balancing your time and balancing. How do you do all three do it? Because you do videos, you're involved in anti-white politics, you're fighting back. So how do you juggle things at home, family, relationships, and fighting back against cultural Marxism, I guess, anti-white politics?
I think you definitely have to pick and choose. And I think that goes back to when you're operating under true feminine nature, you have a better connection to your intuition. And so you know, okay, now is the good time for me to do a video. Now is a good time to take a break. You'll be more connected to be able to choose the time. And a good tip that I have if, you know, someone watching has children and they feel really overwhelmed is to definitely invest in a mother's helper, especially if you're going to be homeschooling and your kids won't be gone being programmed all day, you know, and you're with them all day, is to get a mother's helper who comes to your house and watches your kids so that you could get a laptop, go upstairs, edit your videos, stuff like that. Because traditionally, we didn't live in these little nuclear families, like, you know, separate. We had sisters, we had, you know, grandmothers and stuff helping. All the women helped. So if you have to pay for it, fine, but you need it, so do it.
Very good point. The village helped raise the kids, and I absolutely agree with that. You can have babysitters come, you can have grandma come. Well, you know, mom needs to take time to go do a battle to fight back against anti-white politics for her kids, for her kids' future. And to me,
you don't know what I'm doing upstairs, but if you only knew, right?
And see, to me, this is the ideal alt-right woman. I mean, she has a good relationship. She keeps a little fashy household, but she's also fighting back. You know, she's smart. She knows that she needs to fight back. I mean, it would be nice to be able to just bake pretty cookies all day and pick out curtains and stuff, but that's just not the times that we live in. We don't have that kind of luxury. There's things that we have to do for the future of our children. So these times call for drastic measures. So we actually have to be united with our husbands and fighting back as much as we can, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely. And even if you just do one thing a day, sometimes I barely manage to get a blog post up and I just have to tell myself, okay, that blog post is enough. You don't need to do more than that. And the one day I do filming, okay, you did a video, that's enough. And schedule it out and remind yourself you're not Superwoman. Just get one thing out a day to help out. And don't set unrealistic expectations for yourself that you have to do it all because you watch other people. Because Blonde and I were talking about this before we went live, how every time I see her get a video up, I'm like, oh, I'm behind. I need to do a video. I need to get caught up. My viewers are waiting. But no, go at your own pace. You manage to get one thing done at a time and don't set unrealistic expectations for yourself. And you are helping out.
That's true. And then when I'm feeling discouraged or like I need to get a video out, sometimes it helps if I look at my entire body of work. Then it makes me calm down. It's like, well, this is what I've accomplished in the last year. So if it takes another week, because I feel creatively depleted, it's just going to take that much. And along those lines, you said like doing one thing every day. I think that's really, really helpful. When I'm like working all day, I always try, it sounds like such a small thing, but I always try to cook like a really nice dinner because then I feel like I'm contributing something to my relationship, that I'm doing something for myself, that I'm building a skill. And it doesn't take a lot of brain power. And so that's kind of how every day I'm like, all right, I've been doing this man stuff all day. Yeah. So I kind of bring it back that way.
Yeah.
I think also if you follow, you know, women naturally have a cycle of times where they are really creative and they can put a lot out there. And then you have, you know, the opposite. You have times where you need to be introspective. And so if you can take advantage of those two times, you can take the quiet time to plan and get it all set up and ready for the time where you do have the energy to go out there and do and be inspired to enact things. So taking, you know, knowing, like I was saying, the right time for each action.
Exactly. Part of being feminine is, you know, the masculine side of things, men can, they can just power through and they can do force and they can say, I need to get this done today because that comes from a survival thing. They have to provide for their families or they would die. You know, women, it's a different situation. We shouldn't be forcing it. It should flow. We're feminine, we're water, we're all those things. So it needs to just flow. If there's days where you feel that energy, then go with it. If there's days that you don't and you feel emotional and just need to step away, step away, right?
Yeah, listening to your body is something that I think feminists have like just cast aside, but really you need to listen to yourself because yourself knows beyond all what you've been programmed, you still have it inside.
And be patient with yourself too. I had a day yesterday when I was trying to film and the first take that I did, I had a piece of dust on the lens that was like right here. I had to refilm it. And then my second take, my light fell onto my camera and I nearly lost everything and it caused an avalanche. Some days it's just not meant to be. And just accept it. Be patient with yourself and you'll get another opportunity. And like Blonde said, do something small for yourself, whether or not it's just cooking a meal for your family. And that will give you a feeling of fulfillment.
I always feel so good when I like have a dinner ready and prepped, and I really actually find chopping vegetables to be extremely therapeutic and meditative.
Yeah,
I do too.
I'm glad to know I'm not the only one.
Something about the control of the knife. I don't know. Right. It's just, there's a power to it.
You're so in the moment. You don't have to think about like, you know, all the problems of the world. You're just like,
I'm going to chop
these
off
onions.
A finger.
Right, exactly.
When my sister gets stressed out, she makes pies.
I like it.
Great pie.
Yeah, I mean, I wish we lived in a world where we had our ideal European society and we were just focusing on high culture and progressing in ways that were actually important and making beautiful art and beautiful architecture and, you know, like another Renaissance. I wish that's the times that we lived in. And I I long for that. But unfortunately, that's not the times that we live in. So we're in a different generation. You know, we're kind of, our back is up against the wall. So we're forced to kind of step up in different ways where I think a lot of where our mothers maybe should have, where our grandparents maybe should have. So we have, right. We have a lot of slack to make up for our children. And I feel it's our duty to do these things. It's not enough just to, you know, feed your kids right. You also have to fight for them and teach them to think right, show them the propaganda. These things are important.
Yeah, it's our duty to correct what went wrong in the future generation. Absolutely.
And it also prepares them for the harshness of this anti-white culture we're going through right now, and it teaches them how to defend themselves.
Yeah, because generally, wasn't it always women, thinking back of pagan societies and whatnot, it was women that were in charge of educating the children, right, in the schools? Weren't they the school teachers?
Mm-hmm.
So in your mind, what is the ideal alt-right woman? What is she like? Who wants to jump in there first?
I always say I don't like to idolize like the perfect figure of what you ought to be, because just, you're not them, they're not you, have your own expectations.
It's good to have an archetype, maybe some goals to kind of strive for, right?
Yeah, of course. I would say the ideal alt-right woman takes care of her man and he takes care of her. And they try to strive for a traditional lifestyle of being the woman being at home with the kids and the man is the breadwinner. That doesn't always have to be the case and can't always be the case these days, because sometimes both couples have to work just out of necessity with the economy. But definitely trying to give your children an education that's free of cultural Marxism, I think, is a big feature that you should be idolizing.
Yeah.
I think also the ideal woman would also be connected to nature. Like, just, that's a good way to help recenter yourself and calm yourself. Like, just go outside for a little while and touch the earth with your skin. And I think that would really help women to learn how to balance themselves.
Yeah. And along that thread, to have a wide variety of skills, like a huge breadth and skill set. So like, you know, be able to change a diaper and to cook and to do all the domestic stuff, but also have some like basic handyman skills, be somewhat independent. I think that's important for all women.
I mean, for me, I'm lucky because I was always surrounded by Renaissance men. My father, my brother, they could cook, they can do things around the house, but they were gentlemen. And I was lucky enough to marry someone like that, because for me it was, and I think it is for a lot of women, it is a turnoff when a guy can't boil an egg or help him change the baby's diaper or something. And that's where I think alt-right couples are different, and alt-right men are different. It's not just the old traditional where the woman cooks every single meal and the guy never helps and he doesn't know how to do anything. And that's how a lot of the leftist media is trying to portray women like us and being anti-feminist.
Yes,
that we're just
are.
Serving our husbands, and that our husbands can't do anything for themselves and they don't help for themselves.
That's going to wear out so quickly. They're just beating a dead horse with that. And hopefully we're showing them that is like, stop using that, because it's, and also because I think the fastest way, you know, talking about dating, the fastest way to like kill sex drive in a relationship is to like, is if your man is like, if you're just picking up after him and you're the maid, you know, just like, I love when my husband comes home from work and I have a good meal. I feel so proud and I feel like I'm helping him to do better in supporting me. But also, you know, men should pick up after themselves and stuff like that, because you don't want to be their mother or, you know, their maid. You want to be their partner and you guys work together. And I also think that women shouldn't, I see like a lot of women being afraid to make a change. Like they're stuck in their ways they were taught to be, and they just, it's scary. And it is scary. It's scary to make a change and to do something different, really different. To, you know, if your pediatrician is hounding you about something you don't want to do, then get a different pediatrician. You have to go out there and make a change and not be afraid of it.
Yeah, to pick up also on what Bree said, it's true. There's a lot of different couples, alt-right couples, that found themselves in different situations. They've all waken up in different ways. I mean, I know some couples where the woman actually makes more money and the guy knows how to cook. So there is all kinds of different combos. You know, it's not always so rigid, and there are exceptions to the rule. So we always have to keep that in mind. But and overall, they share the big picture, the future of our people, the future of our children, politics. And those are the most important things. And I always like to draw inspiration back from the pagan societies, when men and women worked together as a unit to get things done. And sometimes there was some crossover in different places, right? In times when it had to be. I was having a conversation with a journalist the other day, and she was acting like prior to feminism and the suffrage movement, women were just oppressed and weren't part of anything and had no freedom. And I'm like, Greece, Rome, Norse. I mean, women were making things in the workplace. They were philosophers. They were very active. So it's just bullshit that we were just oppressed and like chained to the stove. Stoves didn't even exist in those times, right?
Right.
Well, that's why they like to make homemaking out to be like a pointless, awful thing, when actually it's like setting your culture up for success.
Yeah, and I heard it said, I just watched this movie for the first time a few days ago. I think it was My Big Fat Greek Wedding. There was this one line in there that really stuck out to me, when she said, in a relationship, the man is the head and the woman is the neck. But remember, the neck can move the head any way it wants. So just remember that it can be a power play, but you can both complement each other really well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Women, we have the ability to inspire, and that is what we do. You know, usually beauty, women are known for, you know, being beautiful, and we inspire. It's not about demanding.
Why do men go to battle? They have the picture of their woman in their head. That's why they do it.
Yeah, of course.
Exactly.
Everything they do is for women. And I always remind people that too, the whole Western civilization and the whole reason to bring us art and drama and paintings and beautiful clothes is European men who have made all these things. And when you really get down to it, it's about wooing the woman. You know, it's like like how the male bird shakes the tail feather and he has to have some bling to get the female bird to mate. All of it has been one big romantic dance that I see that men have built this civilization for us, and for the reason of procreating, and for our children, and for them to be able to prosper and to be safe. That's why they built these societies for us.
The left likes to have like the monopoly on the word love, you know, but their definition of love is just so like incorrect. It's ridiculous.
And they like to paint the alt-right and traditional women as women who are just cleaning diapers and doing the cooking and doing the sewing and cleaning the house. Like that's all there. That's what the alt-right wants. That's what traditionalist people want. They just want to go back to the old way of doing things, as if we don't have any ideas incorporated from the now, which
really
bothers me, because it turns people off of traditionalism if they think of women in the 1910s or something, and they tell them that women then were oppressed when in fact that helped to lead to a really good nation and a really good society and a feeling of unity. And they just think we want to go back to the 1950s. No, no. We appreciate a lot of the aspects from the 1950s, and we admire that the family was much stronger back then. Women were in much stronger relationships back then. There was less degradation and promiscuity back then, but we're not wanting to rechain women to the stove.
Right, right. And I love getting this argument on my channel too, or like seeing it on Lana's. It's like, we are in masculine type careers right now. Like, how can you say that that we're so stereotypical when we're doing something that is socially alienating us, like as we speak, you know? That's hard on women.
Yeah, women.
So what about us?
Yeah, women have a hard time taking criticism, taking the hits, and women like us are out there and we are taking the hits, and it does require putting on kind of a masculine shield at times to be able to withstand some of those hits. But I think that it's important for other women. And I've seen that since a lot of ladies like you are out there doing this, it's drawn in a lot more women. And that's why the left is, they're getting really worried about that. And I've said this many times, but when women get involved, it becomes serious, because matches are made. There's also a way that women have of delivering things and kind of being a spokesmodels, if you will, for the movement.
A little more palatable coming from a chick, I think.
Exactly. It draws in more people. They're more curious because, you know, we have a softness and we can say hard things and be soft, especially a beautiful woman. She can get away with saying a lot of hard things. And I think that that's one of the reasons why they're freaking out about the alt-right, kind of normalizing a lot of our ideas for other women. Like, it's okay to think like us. And if you do, there's this whole tribe here that you can join of girls that actually have your back for the first time in your life, because a lot of white women haven't had that. A lot of girls that I talk to, like all of you, we all had tons of guy friends because women were generally catty bitches. And I think that they were programmed to be that way through a lot of Marxist TV shows and rhetoric. There has been a covert agenda to get white women to be at each other's throats. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Especially with the cartoons these days that kids watch. Just I monitor what my daughters watch very much, but that first initial time we watch it, I make sure I like to watch it too. It's like all these shows, I can't even listen to it because they're just all bickering. And, you know, that weird sarcasm rudeness and like the stomping and like, I don't want my daughters to pick that up at all and being catty like that.
Yeah, just look at shows like Gossip Girl and how those girls treat one another. And you get a big lesson in what our kids are going to be potentially seeing as far as how to treat kids at school and just the lack of respect for one another.
Oh, we were so mean to each other, the girls and I. We used to sit in a circle, and I might have talked a lot about this before, but we would sit in a circle and take turns telling each other what was wrong with the other one. We were in like sixth or seventh grade. But I look back on that now, it was like a totally normal game for us. But I'm like, oh my God, the self-esteem damage that we were doing to one another is going to last for the rest of our lives, everybody involved in that. And we're like, la, 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 this is so fun.
I mean, it's one thing for constructive criticism. I appreciate that. I think good friends could be able to tell you things in a nice, kind way. Hey, you know, maybe you can improve on that. I appreciate it when people do that with me. But then there's this awful way of doing it.
Yeah. My friends I have like a big group of friends and we're all really close. And you guys know me and how, you know, crazy natural I am. And I can like, we have a group text and I'm always thinking like, okay, all my friends are probably rolling their eyes right now, but I'm going to say it, you know, like constructive criticism is.
Yeah. And the other thing is if you look at a lot of the TV shows, and this has been happening, God, since the 70s and the 80s, when you go back and look at a lot of those movies, the evil girl in school is always the pretty blonde girl, right? She's the bad one. She's the bitchy one. She's the trouble one. She's the privileged one. And even today you see that. It's the pack of white girls, the pretty white girls that are the problem. And it's the mixed race or the multicultural or the lefty ugly girl with her little cat glasses and purple hair. That's
back in clothes.
That are the good ones, right?
Just look at Mean Girls and the girls that got along and hailed themselves as being good people. They were the outcasts. Like, what was that one girl's name? I can't even remember. She had like raccoon eyeliner and the goth hair, and she was supposed to be the real friend. And the plastics where all the pretty girls were just enemy number one.
They're always the underdog and, you know, like celebrating weakness.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, I've said this many times, but I mean, liberalism, what's happening to us, the attacks on the alt-right is a war on beauty. Would you all agree with that?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Just look at all the comments on my YouTube videos. I want to like put together like a screenshots of all the times someone has asked me like, where are your eyebrows? What's up with this? Like, I have like a list and it's like hilarious. Like, okay, I don't bleach my hair. My hair is, I have eyebrows, guys, and they're actually quite hairy and I get them waxed. And everyone's like, oh, the comments. Yeah.
Don't read your comments. I've gotten to the point where I almost never read them.
Yeah, a lot of times, don't forget, there's a lot of lefty agitators and GIDF type groups that are out there and just commenting away, you know, trying to make the movement look bad and trying to attack women. I notice a lot of the worst comments will be directed towards women, and I don't think that they're coming from our people. I really don't.
And it's always a comment about how you look or how you sound. It's never, I don't have any
about your argument or what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm like, come on, somebody get me going here. Like, stop talking about the way I look. Like, challenge me. I want to get
It used to bother me so much. But then one time I went to the Daily Mail or something stupid, and I was looking in the comment section of this beautiful actress, Margot Robbie, who's like perfect looking.
Yeah, she's
And
gorgeous.
I was looking at the comments. She's beautiful, yeah. I was looking through the comments, and like there was one that was hugely upvoted that was like, this fat old bitch. I was like, all right, if Margot Robbie is getting this, then I can give myself a break here and stop reading my comment section all the time.
Yeah, for me, it's always my voice. People always want to say something about my voice, and my voice is actually a disability for me. I was born premature, and my vocal cords don't like open the whole way. But I always try to look at it as a positive, like a Demi Moore, Marilyn Monroe kind of voice. Like maybe it's just an extra feature. But oh my God, people are brutal in the comments about my voice. So it always comes down to the way you look or the way you sound. A lot of the time, they don't actually counter your argument.
And why do they want to accept, like, you know, the saying, I was born this way, but it doesn't apply to like me, a white person with really white hair. I was born this way. My eyebrows are white. It's okay.
Yeah.
I think that's another reason so many women get into liberalism is that liberals think they have a monopoly on acceptance and beauty. So you're beautiful just the way you are. You don't need to lose weight.
Laziness.
You're beautiful with that electric blue hair that's about this long. You're beautiful wearing those combat boots and a trench coat. You're fine just the way you are. And they think they have a monopoly on beauty by accepting all forms of degeneracy as beauty.
Of course, you're fine the way you are. And we accept everybody unless if you're National Socialist, Fascist, Alt-Right, Traditionalist, Christian. I mean, the list just goes on and on, right?
Or just why are we the ones
white's good enough,
losing friends? Like when we've tolerated all of it, and we still are accepting of our leftist friends, but it's them that just want to shut us out.
That's true. I lost a friendship back in January pretty brutally, where a friend called me up in tears, just sobbing to pieces because I had written a couple blog posts on race realism. She said we couldn't be friends anymore. I was just so racist and so intolerant, and she hoped I healed from this very hateful period of my life, and it's not the way to be. And I'm just going, I tolerated your far, far, far left feminist friends for the last 3 years and went to your breakfast parties where you were pretty much trashing the men that you were with on a constant basis.
Were they vegan? Vegan breakfast
independent
parties?
Women. Pardon?
I said, were they vegan breakfast parties? Were they having soy patties at breakfast?
No, I mean, I have a picture of me with all of them, and I was like the tiniest one in the group. They were all overweight.
This is why they want to try and redefine beauty so that it can include all the ugly girls. It's always the ugly girl saying beauty is old fashioned. There is no ideal beauty. And it's like there is a golden ratio that exists. When a beautiful woman walks in the room, everyone knows she is a beautiful woman. There is no denying it. Same goes with men. You know, that is a handsome, good looking man. You're
and
never
that is
going
something
to take
I will
that
say
away.
Of the right is that it's just we're just better looking. We're just better looking than the left. Like when I look at feminists in Seattle, I'm like, man, this acceptance thing has really allowed you to stop doing baseline maintenance on yourself. Yeah. I'm not talking like, I'm talking like, don't cover yourself in tattoos and gain 100 pounds. That's baseline maintenance in Seattle. But like these women, they really don't care. They're like, you're going to love me no matter what.
Yeah. The bar is really low on the left as far as who they will accept. Well, you guys brought up a good point, losing friends. Now, have a lot of you lost friends, girlfriends specifically? Or do you still have leftist friends? What's going on in that front?
I pushed my last leftist friend.
Sorry, go ahead, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead, Blonde.
I wasn't doing too great in the female friends department before I started my channel. So I haven't like lost too many friends. I kind of cut the fat. But it's caused some problems in my existing interpersonal relationships. And like, my parents aren't super happy about some of the stuff I've said.
Same here. I had to break to the family that I was touching on a few subjects that they were kind of like, oh, I'd prefer if you did. I'd prefer if you didn't, but it's your life. It's your channel. Do what you want. And like I said, I had a massive backlash with that one friend, and all her like 20 friends unfriended me on Facebook overnight. Oh, so it was kind of a chain reaction thing.
You really did cut the fat.
Overnight and afterwards,
like
I kind of felt
2,000
like,
pounds of fat.
Like I got, I felt pretty good afterwards. Actually, like now I can really let loose because I'm not trying to protect anybody.
Yeah. What about you, Elora?
You know, I'm not yet, but I feel like
it's coming.
It could be coming. So Not yet, though.
Well, now look out, because they're relating homemaking, cooking, a lot of the things that you do with fascism. Look at Man in the High Castle. The woman that's pretty and keeps things nice and cooks and it's orderly. Fascists, right? That's trouble. I mean, literally, these are things that they're saying. Our friend Ayla was recently attacked in the press, as you saw.
Oh, God, I saw that.
I mean,
that
she's this
horrible.
Cute little housewife who's just gentle and kind and speaks
common
sense.
And she just has a Twitter and a small channel. It's like, why is this news? Why is this on Daily Mail, New York Post, some Salt Lake City, Tribune or something like that? It's like it got picked up probably by 5 or 6 pretty big media outlets.
To set her as an example, basically, to shame. They want to shame women who are like that, who talk like that, make an example. So if you're like Ayla and you even think about these things, you never know. The Daily Mail might do a paper, might do a story on you, and all your family and friends are going to freak out and lose you. And it's
an intimidation tactic.
Yeah, and it's crazy. The Daily Mail used to be considered conservative, right? They're always talking about mass immigration and the white low birth rate. And then they attack Ayla, who's offering a solution. Well, have more babies. It's ridiculous.
That's how you know that we are really making strides, is when they have to resort to that. They're afraid, and they should be.
Yeah, they ought to be, because more and more women are waking up to how feminism has poisoned them, and they want to find men and they want to find a good home life. And the more that we do this and wake people up, the more that doxing isn't going to work.
Right.
We've developed a network now where we can just rally the troops and people will get behind you if that kind of thing happens.
Yeah. And you have to think about why they found Ayla offensive, like, or threatening. They probably found her threatening. And it's because she exudes happiness, and you can tell that she has achieved genuine lifelong happiness from her traditionalism. And she's a former feminist, which makes her all the more powerful, her opinions all the more powerful.
Yeah, I mean, she had a degree in female spirituality, for crying out loud.
Like a higher degree. I think it was a master's degree. And she lived in San Francisco for a decade. There's no way you're not going to be afflicted after that.
Well, do you guys think that women, or ladies, I don't know why I'm saying guys, are women more egalitarian by nature? What do you all think?
I think no to that front, because if you look at like medieval times and Renaissance days, women were pretty cutthroat. You can't marry that guy. He's not on the right station. People in the royal court were pretty vicious. Oh, that woman lost her honor. You can't associate with her because she had a baby out of wedlock or whatever. So I do think this egalitarian stuff is rather recent, like with Lenin and communism and Trotsky and the Frankfurt School and all that. I think that is a recent development that kind of caters to women as far as their sensitivities and wanting to be empathetic with other people, because we do come from issues from a very emotional level the majority of the time. But I don't think it was always that way. You can just watch an episode of Downton Abbey and see how they were saying, oh, you can't take that girl, she's above your station, how dare you, you can't even sit with their family, because I think the cab driver married a girl of the family that they were serving, and it was the biggest gossip around the town. So I don't think they were naturally egalitarian in the past.
I definitely agree. And even though it's anecdotal, like I've had a few different relationship types, like where I'm more dominant, and then I'll, in the next relationship, I'll try to be more submissive. And consistently, my relationships are of better quality when I'm more submissive and when I follow the lead of the man I'm in the relationship with. And so I think that is, I'm kind of an alpha woman. I think that's probably the natural state of even strong-willed women, is they want to be with a stronger-willed man to lead them and to guide them. And that's where they're most comfortable. And women don't want to hear this. Like if you tell this to like a feminist, like, ugh, they just
how
do not want to hear it.
Strong,
yeah. But it's not necessarily that you're not strong. You just want to be with somebody that's stronger. I don't think that we're natural egalitarians at all. Not at all. No.
I also think that women, like, I'm talking about intuition, but it's so true. Like, we deep down know who should get our attention and who shouldn't. We know that we can't make everyone happy, okay? And we need to pick and choose who's going to have our backs and who is not.
Yeah, I'd say that women are more competitive than anything. Exactly. We're not egalitarian. What woman wants to be equal? She wants to be the best one in the room. She wants to be above all the other girls. And this is based on a evolutionary thing. They want to be the prettiest, the best woman in the room to attract the best man, for people to look at her. I mean, that's just a fact. So this whole egalitarianism thing is just fake. And if women support that, honestly, they're just lying to themselves. So I wanted to get some thoughts on, why do you think the divorce rate is so high?
I definitely think it's because you have the masculine, you have the feminine, and they're just like trying to be what they're not. And if you have two, like a broken femininity and broken masculine, like two wrongs don't make a right. And they could be together, but eventually it's not going to work out. We need one and we need the other, because we work together that way instead of, you know.
I think also women are getting increasingly fickle. I think women account for 70% of initiations for divorces these days. I think I heard Blonde saying that actually somewhere. And you look at what we're showed. Look at shows like Sex and the City, where the men are completely disposable. Oh, he did this. Oh, we'll just get rid of him. You can do better than him. And yes, they sit around the table and discuss and gossip about their men and pretty much come up with reasons as to why they're not good enough for them. And then we have people like Elizabeth Gilbert writing novels like Eat, Pray, Love. I remember back when I was a liberal and I thought that was the best book in the world. And now I'm like, ew. Because it convinced a lot of women in their middle ages to up and leave their spouse and that they can make it on their own and you're an independent woman. So I think women, not all, but I think a lot of women are largely to blame just for making men disposable.
I would agree. Yeah. And that's what I was going to say. I hear people that are divorced say like, oh, I fell out of love. I'm like, so what?
Work on it.
Yeah. Figure it out. Like, you have kids. What do you mean you fell out of love? I don't even think that that matters. That's not a basis for a divorce. When that happens in a relationship and you're married and you have kids, especially, like, you just got to work through it. You just got to find a way to love the person that you've chosen, because you've already built a life with them. But I see baby boomers, like a lot of my friends' parents were divorced. I would say, I don't know, 70% growing up. And I lived in like a really affluent area. That shouldn't be the case. And it's always like, I just fell out of love with the person. I just couldn't do it.
I don't even know how that's possible. And that means that they didn't even love them to begin with. I mean, there's different kinds of love. It's not always goo goo gaga, head over heels all the time. But they're underneath that, it should be a love between, like, this is my best friend. This is someone I relate to. It's become a feeling of family. So I don't understand how you could just fall out of love. I think, too, a lot of women nowadays are more in love with the wedding than the actual marriage. I mean, look at how many wedding movies there are and how much money they make out of it. They're more obsessed with that than the guy. They almost want to show off to their friends, and they want to have the big rock, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
and they're basically like little girls when they go into these marriages too. They're not committed. They don't want to do hard work. And a lot of liberalism has made people like children.
They want that princess day where every girl can feel like a princess. And I flat out told my boyfriend, I don't need a big wedding. I'd be fine with something small. I already have the dress I bought at a vintage shop 5 years ago because it was cheap and I thought it was pretty. I don't need this whole big shebang because I don't like what it symbolizes, that you need that sort of thing. Right. I guess that's just the minimalist in me. But yeah, I've never liked that whole huge wedding thing. I think it's kind of like you're seeing a doomsday thing take place before you when you go to a huge wedding, because I notice a lot of people who put more effort into that than they do the actual marriage.
Yeah, there are studies that support that. People that spend more money on their wedding tend to have higher rates of divorce, but that probably is, you know, a symptom of them being financially irresponsible. I mean, you are spending tens and tens of thousands of dollars for a single day. I used to work at a bridal shop, and this woman came in and she spent $30,000 just on two dresses.
Jeez.
And I was just thinking, like, oh my God, like, you could travel the world for years with what you're spending on your wedding. Why would you ever spend that much money? And it's just because you want to show people that you're rich. I can't think of another reason.
Yeah, just showing off, basically. Oh boy. Yeah. Well, I also wanted to ask, we talked about egalitarianism, but do you think that women are generally conformist and afraid to take risks? Because look at us. We're obviously not conformist and we're not afraid to take risks.
I think that we're an anomaly, not really the norm, because most women, they like having their pack and they feel that they kind of seek validation through their friends, and they receive it emotionally through their friends. And when they lose that, they almost feel like they lose a part of themselves. And I've known quite a few women over the years that they could not have a boyfriend. They always had to have a boyfriend. I knew a girl, by the next day, she would have a new boyfriend. So I think there is a quality to women that feel more validated and more secure when they have a pack. I've always felt more validated by knowing that I could survive on my own, which is, I think, why I can make videos and kind of be ostracized a little bit by some individuals out there and not really feel anything about it. But I don't think that's a normal quality.
I think also society is promoting laziness and not taking chances. And like, if I wouldn't have taken a chance and had a voice to speak out, I would still be one of the people you think is a housewife and just stays home. But I took a chance, and I had passion in my life that I wanted to carry out. And I think that a lot of women, just through the foods we eat and the chemicals we're exposed to, were just kind of like blah. And that's what they want you to be, is to be conformist, but we're not conformist by nature.
Yeah, that's a good point you made there. And with high risk comes big reward. All of us women have taken risks here, and we've been rewarded in different ways in our life. Some of us have met love. Some of us have made great friends. Some of us are finding fulfillment and having a creative outlet, or letting the passion flow in a way, feeling right, more complete. So yeah, we're risk takers. Us women are risk takers. And I'm always wondering what makes us women so different? Because a lot of these liberal women, they're not risk takers. I mean, that's just all conformity. No. Even though they have piercings and blue hair, there's no risk involved in that, or swinging or saying you're bisexual. There's no risk at all. What the things that we talk about, that is a high risk area. I don't think it can get any more high risk.
Yeah, we broke free of those chains, like saying just stay on the couch, just stay down, you know. We broke free of that.
But I do kind of feel like I'm always fighting the need to conform. Like, it's still unnatural for me to take some of the positions that I do, which makes me think that innately women do want to conform, that we want to be taken care of by our in-group, that we don't want to be socially alienated. And I think that things in my life have prepared me for this alienation in ways that are unique to me. But for the average woman, this would probably be a really awful experience. I think that it'd be overwhelming and stressful. But you ladies seem the same way. I mean, do you feel like you want to take a position of conformity ever, just to make your life easier?
I did for a while. I mean, the way I started making videos, I kind of plunged in head first blind. I made my diversity in books video, and the entire publishing industry came after me. And it actually felt kind of freeing, because I did feel the need to conform before then. And I wanted maybe to be traditionally published one day. And after I realized that's never going to happen, because it's all predominantly leftist and Marxist, and it wasn't the cool club I thought it was at all, it was quite freeing. So from that adversity of undergoing a 360 SJW attack, I came out stronger, feeling like I can say whatever I want now. I can let her rip. So I'm going to let her rip. And there's a certain level of freedom that you get from that. It's scary when it happens. But later, oh my God, you feel so much stronger and tougher. And I go back and see some of the other people that I used to associate with, and I'm sorry, those other ladies are weak. You come out so much stronger than everyone else.
Agreed. It does feel good to have, you know, found you ladies, to know that you're not alone also.
And the other the other important question is, conforming to what? I'm okay conforming to things like ethno-nationalism, you know, but I'm not okay conforming to communism, for instance. So what are we conforming to is the most important thing. To me, I want to conform to the natural order of natural human state, the natural female state, how nature has made me. I want to be in line with what nature made. And what we're being asked to conform to now is something that's completely unnatural. You know, so for me, that made me miserable. I think I picked up on it unconsciously. But I've always been the dreamer. I'm an artist. I've always been a Pisces. So I've always kind of been more on the fringes. So for me, it was kind of a natural transition when I met my husband, and then we went into these things, you know. And but I also have a good support system. I have a I have a family who thinks like I do in many ways, and I also have a husband that's very supportive. And I think that that's really important. And I've made a lot of girlfriends and friends. So having a support system, a tribe, a village makes that transition so much easier. And I think that that's what we're doing here, ladies. We're building our tribe, you know, and that's very,
don't be afraid
very
to
important.
Reach out to other right-wing women as well. I reached out to Blonde thinking, oh my God, this girl's so cool. I want to be friends. Don't be afraid to reach out to other right-wing women out there so you can have an outlet.
Yeah, this is finding, how we build communities.
Go ahead.
Oh, this is how we build communities. And I don't know if, I don't know about you guys, but like when I meet other women like me, and like when I do Red Ice, and when I did Virtue of the West with Tara McCarthy and Brittany Pettibone, it gives me like a sense of camaraderie, and it emboldens me, and it makes me feel like there are other women who are, you know, normal and well-rounded and beautiful, and they're doing this too with great success, and it makes me feel like I'm part of something much bigger, and that's empowering.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, like, making friends when you're adult can be like sometimes a little awkward, and you feel like you're dating again. You're like, hey, I see we have this thing in common. You want to talk? Yeah. Like, and you're like, what? I don't know.
Yeah, it gets so much harder as you get older to make friends. But you gotta push yourself to say hi.
Yeah.
Yeah. And right wingers are some of the most accepting people I've ever met in my life. They really. They're the tolerant ones, I have to say.
Yeah.
They really look out for one another in a way that I've never seen the left do. The left eat their own.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
yeah. I think really the best way to reach a lot of lefty women to kind of undo their brainwashing is through entrainment. And then I think it would be being exposed to women like us who have a group, who have a good time together, who are free, women that are attractive, women that other women want to be like. If they see that, then they want to be in there. They want to be a part of that. They want to kind of be let in on that. So a lot of it is just turning our back on those lefty women. And you know how women are. As soon as you turn your back on them, then they like want to go in there, and they want to be in there, and they want to be in the center. So a lot of it is just ignoring them and walking away from them and just kind of looking down on them. I think that will drive them more nuts than anything. So last question for you. A lot of guys ask this. I've heard all kinds of takes here. Best way for men to red pill their girlfriends and wives?
Oh boy. Send it to my channel.
My husband definitely like red pilled me. And I was trying to think of like what made him successful at it. I'm not sure, but it just took time. And my husband's a very bold person, and he really sticks up for what he believes in, and that's something I admire about him. And I think we have such a good relationship that I trust what he has to say, and I'm like, okay, you know, I'll look into it. And it took me maybe several months, a year, but slowly he just, you know, kept working at me, and I was like, okay. And you know, and it's not like I'm just conforming to my husband. You know, I have my own personality and thoughts, and I looked into it, and I was like, wow, this goes along with what I have been working at, you know, freeing yourself from chemicals and terrible foods. And, you know, it went along with what I was already set into motion.
Also, I know this is going to sound really harsh, but the sooner you can let your girlfriend know that her lefty friends don't have her best interest at heart, the better. I mean, I would never say like completely disown your lefty friends and you're not allowed to see them, but a lot of them have the ear of their best friends, or their best friend has their ear. So just kind of let them know that maybe some of their very liberal friends don't always have their best interest at heart, because they're all about, oh, you don't need him. You can do better. You can do better.
Right.
And
then
also, like Lon was saying before, women tend to listen to other women. So send her one of Blonde's videos. That's a great way to start, and just kind of give them little teeny red pills. And that can give you a foundation for a discussion that you can have, which can give you a stronger relationship.
Definitely. That's exactly what I was going to say. Incremental approach, I think, is key if you're in a pre-existing relationship. If you're meeting somebody new, I would just say to draw hard lines about, like, you know, this is what I believe. If you have a problem with any of these things, then it's not going to work out as a couple. But if you're in a relationship with somebody, incremental approach, plant those seeds Plant those
And
seeds.
if they can't be red-pilled and they butt you back really hard, that's a sign that that's not going to be a good relationship.
It might not be the right relationship, right?
Exactly. You have to find women, too, that are kind of on the fence that you can sway. Because like I say, a lot of women are not politically inclined really one way or the other. They're not really truly convinced. So I think there can be a level of persuasion and getting women to see things. I know when I met Henrik, you know, being the flighty Pisces at the time, I didn't think of things of like covert warfare and propaganda and you know, sly things that are swaying the public. I mean, because that's generally a masculine brain thing. So a man can kind of teach a woman how to think and analyze, and even through basic little stupid TV shows, like, why are they making all these anti-white comments, or why this or why that? I found that like stupid TV shows have actually been really good. But Elora, like you were saying too, there's a lot of girls that are on that truth-seeking path. You know, we come from the conspiratorial angle too. And I think the natural progression when you're truth-seeking is that you come to these topics that we're talking about now. So you kind of have to find where a woman is at in her level of truth and her politics. And then, like Blonde is saying, incrementally.
Yeah. And talking about gender dynamics, I know that like in my personal relationships, once I realized that I needed to be the submissive one, it was largely a relief. I'm like, oh, great. I don't have to wear the pants anymore. This is a very unnatural position for me to be in. And I think that if you're red pilling your girlfriend, that she'll probably discover that some of the more masculine positions that she was taking with her feminism are unnatural, and she might fall into a more comfortable role. And that's how she'll know you're right.
And also, once you start seeing some of the stuff, you can't unsee it. So once you you start pointing out some of the anti-white rhetoric going out there, and she actually goes out into the world and starts seeing it, and she goes to the mall, because like the mall near me, it's all like Middle Eastern people and Indians working in the booths. Like, they don't hire white people, they're diversity quota. Once she actually starts seeing that stuff out in the real world, she'll take you more seriously.
And the other thing is, you have to be a man that she just can't resist. Look well, be well, talk well, be successful, and then she'll just kind of fall in line because she wants to be with you. She wants to make you happy
and
please you, and she doesn't want to let you go. But I think the power of a man to persuade a woman, guys shouldn't poo-poo that, because they actually have a great power to persuade a woman. So that's great. Well, as we close here, I think everyone needs to share their YouTubes and their Twitters. So, Elora, since you're new, we'll start with you.
Okay, you can find me on Twitter. I couldn't get, like, my exact name, so you'll have to find it's at TBB Maker, the Blonde Butter Maker. And you can also find me, the Blonde Butter Maker, my Instagram. That's where I kind of started out. And my YouTube channel is also The Blonde Butter Maker. Oh, and I also have a WordPress that is The Blonde Butter Maker.
Great. Perfect. And Bree, what about you?
You can find me on YouTube just under Bree Fauchet, BreeFauchaux. And you can find me on Gab and Twitter at Bree_Fauchet. And then there's also my blog where I really just let her rip. And that's BreeFauchet.wordpress.com.
And of course, Rebecca.
I am Blonde in the Belly of the Beast on YouTube. I am Libtard America on Twitter, and I just started a Minds account. I swear one day I'm going to start posting on it. And you can email me at blondeinthebellyofthebeast@gmail.com.
I have a Minds as well that I just started.
This has been a lot of fun. I always say it's fun to talk to alt-right women, because we can talk about girly things like makeup, we can talk about cooking, but then we can also talk about anti-white politics and Marxist. So, you know, we are truly diverse, and we actually are very diverse in terms of our spirituality. You know, we can talk to atheists and Christians and pagans. So we have all the diversity that we need between us in the alt-right. So, and I think that we should hang on to that. I think it's good. We shouldn't all be exactly the same, because we contribute different things. And it's wonderful having you ladies here and meeting you. And we're building great friendships, and I'm looking forward to what the future holds. And I think 10 years from now, some of the things that we talk about aren't going to be very extreme. They're actually going to be quite mainstream because of the work that people like you are doing. So thank you very much, everyone, for coming on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us on.
Yes.